And Reverend Jan, would you please come up and do our daily word reading today? Thank you, music team, our expanded music team today. Makes it even better. I have to tell you, I really had a difficult time coming up with a short story today to fit the mode, so at least something to do with the journey, but I did find one, and it's about this couple, this married couple, and they were going on a road trip. And it didn't start out well at all. The first half hour was all sorts of fighting and bickering between the two of them that resulted in that ice-cold silence. But then they were driving along, and they came across a farming road, and the husband looked out at what was going on in the field, and there were donkeys, and there were cows, and there were pigs. And he turned to his wife, and he says, "Remind you of your family?" And she said, "Yeah, my in-laws." I need a drum roll or something once in a while, you know? Well, this is Palm Sunday. It's a very significant day in the church calendars all over the world because it really launches the beginning, a whole series of really significant events that have a very definite influence and a very definite reflection of things that go on in our own lives on a metaphysical level. And Palm Sunday doesn't get all of that much of a fanfare because, you know, we tend to focus on Christmas, obviously, and Easter, which is just a week away. But it really, really, really is a profound holiday. And so I want to try to create some sort of an emphasis on this today. And so for starters, I have something that I'm inviting you to do, which is a very simple, easy exercise. And I invite you just to take a minute and close your eyes. Think back to a time in your life where you really felt good about yourself. A time in your life when you were very pleased with yourself for something that you said or you did or the way that you showed up. And it doesn't have to be monumental. We're not talking about winning the Oscar here or a Nobel Prize or anything like that. But just a time, if even for a brief moment, the pieces came together. And maybe you have to go all the way back into your childhood to do this. And if you do, you still have that memory because it was such a satisfying, gratifying moment in your life. For example, this may not come as a big surprise to you, but I was never much of a basketball player. It's not just because I'm vertically challenged, but I just never had the knack of putting the ball through the hoop. But one day when I was about 12 years old, I was out in the schoolyard, and we were playing basketball. And something mysterious and wonderful happened. On that day, I couldn't miss. I was dropping them through that hoop from all over that court, not even touching the rim. And it reached a point that I absolutely knew before I took the shot that that ball was going to go in. And of course, it could be something a bit more profound in your life. You know, maybe it's the time, that day, that moment when you learned that you were going to be a father. Or maybe it's that moment in which you actually gave birth. Or maybe just the time when you actually witnessed the birth of a child. Something magical. And maybe it was something very ordinary, like the time you got that very first paycheck. And you held on to it with this glowing sense of satisfaction because you knew that it represented a hard week's worth of work. Or maybe it was that first kiss between you and somebody else that you really found to be very special. Or maybe it's the time you walked into a doctor's office knowing that you were going to get a good report after having done a long battle with an illness that was life-threatening. All of us regardless of how boring or uneventful or how painful your life might have been. At some point in your life, I guarantee you, if you try hard enough, you will come up with some time in which you really shine. And so I want to ask you, does anybody want to volunteer something that they thought of over the last couple of moments? Times in your life in which you knew, if only for a moment, that you had it all together. Don't be bashful. Super. Thank you for sharing. All of these things that people have shared, and I know that you all have them, these are times, maybe just for a millisecond, when your light was not under a bushel. This was a time in which your light became manifest and glowed. And maybe it was only a time that you realized it yourself. And all you gave to it was a silent yes. So what does all this have to do with Palm Sunday? Well, this is a passage worth reading. All four Gospels accounts carry the story of Palm Sunday. And the one that I've chosen to share with you this morning is from the Gospel of Luke. When he had come near Bethphage and Bethany at the place called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples saying, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find tied there a colt that has never been ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' just say this, 'The Lord needs it.' So those who were sent departed and found it as they had been told. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, 'Why are you untying this colt?' And they said, 'The Lord needs it.' Then they brought it to Jesus, and after throwing their cloaks on the colt, they set Jesus on it. And as he rode along, people kept spreading their cloaks on the road. As he was now approaching the path down from the Mount of Olives, the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully with a loud voice for all the deeds of power that they had seen, saying, 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven, and glory in the highest heaven.' And some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to him, 'Teacher, order your disciples to stop.' And he answered, 'I tell you, if these were silent, the stones would shout out.'" It's a strange story in several ways. You know, if you go through the Gospels, Jesus obviously did a lot of wonderful things. He worked a lot of miracles. He healed the sick. He told stories that were powerful and got messages across. And he led by his own personal example. But throughout much of the Gospel, Jesus really kind of maintains a low profile. And in fact, on a couple of occasions, he specifically instructs his followers, after he had performed a miracle, keep your mouths shut. Don't go telling anybody about this. You know, just keep it cool. But on this day, what we witness is a transformation of a state of mind on his part. What we see here is the birth of a new consciousness in which Jesus is doing two things. He's recognizing exactly who and what he is. And not only that, he's accepting who and what he is. Palm Sunday, then, is all about the acceptance of the truth with a capital T. The story starts out with Jesus being near the city of Bethphage, which represents metaphysically a consciousness of a space, of an area where grace is available and grace is being exercised. And we all have this going on in our own lives. Those kinds of things that I was inviting you to think about were the times where there was, on an unconscious level, an awareness of the grace that is available to each and every one of us. Something that allows us to spur forward and to go forth and to do whatever it is in that given moment. And as the story continues, Jesus asks his disciples to go and retrieve a donkey. And they brought the donkey back, and they put a cloak on it, and he rides in on the donkey. And in doing so, he fulfills a 500-year-old prophecy that Jesus certainly would have been aware of, as well as all of the people in the crowd, that this is how the Messiah was going to appear. But the donkey also represents something else that's incredibly significant. That donkey represents humility. And we always have these notions in our head that we have to pump ourselves up and talk about our greatness and how incredibly wonderful we are before we embark upon something and get up the nerve to take a chance and do something, when really the key ingredient behind it all in developing a true sense of wonder about who we are and what we are really comes first and foremost from a place of being truly humble. When we think of the word prophet, because this was a fulfillment of a prophecy, we tend to think of somebody who's foretelling the future and probably not talking about good things that are going to happen. But a prophet is really something much more profound, much more deep than that. We're familiar with the prophet. In Unity, we tend to talk about the prophet in terms of that still, small voice. It's our inner intuition. It's the voice of God that inspires us, enlightens us, and calls us forward to do things that perhaps we're not always that comfortable accepting and doing. The palms in the story represent the spiritual strength that are available to us at that moment when we, in fact, make a conscious or even a subconscious decision to move forward and engage in our spiritual path in a very meaningful way in our lives. It's that time when we decide to say yes to that inner intuition, to that inner prophet. And so it's really a significant thing to understand that in our own ways, each and every one of us truly, in the most powerful sense, are prophets, because we are engaging with that still small voice that is within us. And there's a very fascinating part of the story at the very end when the Pharisees witness what's going on, and they could feel the frenzy, and they could feel the power and the emotion and people crying out and cheering. And it doesn't make them all that comfortable, because they have this innate knowing on their part that this isn't good for us. This isn't good for our institution and our establishment in the way we are accustomed to having things run around here. So it's a legitimate perceived threat on their part. And so in effect, they ask Jesus, put a lid on it. And Jesus responds, if I told them to be quiet, the stones themselves would cry out. And those stones represent the basis, lowest part of our awareness, our consciousness. And the significance of this is that when we do take a spiritual step forward along the path, you know, and we begin to feel that energy that comes out of taking such a step in our lives, it doesn't just something that occurs in our heads or even in our hearts, but it's something that permeates through our entire being. That crazy day when I was 12 years old and pouring basketballs into the hoop, I felt it in my toes. I felt it in my toenails. It was such a euphoric feeling. I didn't want to let go of it. And I wasn't even playing in gym shoes. I was playing in street shoes with no socks. And by the end of the time when I finally quit and went home, my toes were bleeding. It's a true story. I have the corns to prove it. But I don't care. Because it's something that, as you engage upon the process, it just spreads and multiplies. It doesn't become a part of you. It becomes a manifestation of what you always were to begin with. Well, the obvious question is, well, so what happens when you feel this intuition, you hear that still small voice, and you choose to ignore it or go in another direction? Well, if you have an understanding of the law of mind and you resist it, the law of mind continues, and the law of mind eventually mirrors back to you your own resistance. And I know every one of us has had that experience. You know, sometimes you're just not in sync. You know, you're dropping things, baby, or even the good things aren't so great, and you just feel like you can't get that mojo working. And maybe what you're experiencing when that goes on in your life is you declining that invitation to climb up on your donkey and take a parade into the city of Jerusalem. The law never changes. That's why it's called the law. And so it's up to us and how we use the law to change if we want to begin to make a difference in our lives. All that Jesus did that day as he marched into Jerusalem was consistent with his image of a Messiah. And we got to talk about this word image for just a bit, because the image that the people who were cheering so profoundly had was not exactly the image that he shared. Because they were talking and feeling and groping for a political image. We all have an image. You know, we all go through great lengths to show up in ways that we think will be acceptable, highly regarded. And in many cases, what we're really talking about is a persona. A persona is a type of mask that we tend to put on a daily basis, most of the times to hide what we perceive to be our own frailties, age wrinkles, lack of knowledge, or whatever. But sometimes when we put on that persona, when we adapt that image, we're also hiding our image, the image that we share with Jesus as the great I am. And it all kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And again, we, in doing so, we tend to ignore that still small voice that calls out to us, not just in meditation, but with every single breath that we take. But in taking that ride into Jerusalem that day, Jesus asserted himself as the Messiah. He was accepting a cloak of royalty that was a spiritual cloak of royalty. You know, we might have the tendency to sit back and say, well, sure, it was easy for him. Easier said than done. But not really, because if you read the gospel accounts, it was pretty obvious that Jesus had the awareness that with this new consciousness and with this new assertion of who and what that he was, it probably was going to end up costing him his life. But maybe on the other hand, it isn't so difficult after all. At the beginning of the talk, I asked to just take a couple of moments and reflect on those special times in your life. The time when you really, really nailed it. And in the grand scheme of things, it might seem relatively insignificant, but it's not, and it wasn't. Each and every one of those experiences that each and every one of you had in those precious moments was a Palm Sunday. It was your personal Palm Sunday. It was your recognition, and more importantly, your acceptance of who and what you truly are. And it doesn't take a 1,000-foot parade. It just takes a simple yes at any given time. One time when I was traveling in Brazil, there was this guy that had the nickname Junior. We always gave Junior a hard time, mostly because he asked for it. But one time we were going by his home, and we were in the car, and he pointed to his three-year-old daughter. And he said, "You know, Mike, I may mess up a lot. I may screw things up a lot. But with her, this is one time I got it right. This is one time that I know that I did exactly what God wanted me to do." No Academy Awards here. No ticker tape parades. But there was a realization on his part, on a very metaphysical level, of what Palm Sunday was all about. Taking that next step forward. We may just refer to this as being in the zone and not even attach any spiritual significance to it. But then there's always that underlying understanding that all greatness, all good, always comes from the one power, one source. Whether you call that God, Spirit, or Father. Spirituality comes in many shapes and forms. And maybe some more of those moments that didn't come to your mind and you need to have your memory jog a bit. Maybe it was about making every basketball shot. And maybe it was about birthing a child. Or maybe it was a simple thank you at an appropriate time to somebody. Maybe it's all about forgiveness. When you conjured up the courage to ask somebody for forgiveness and say, "I'm sorry," or you had the courage to let it go and forgive somebody. Maybe it's all about picking up the phone and calling a friend and just saying, "I'm just giving you a call because I was thinking about you." Maybe it's about preparing and sharing a meal. Maybe it's about holding a door open for a stranger as you're walking into Target or out of the Jewel someday. All of these can be examples of Palm Sunday, your Palm Sunday. Because if things are done in a way that is consistent with our image with a capital I and our Christ-like, the great I am that we all share, then in each and every case, we are taking our own triumphant ride into Jerusalem.